The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Back to the Basics. No one saw 2020 coming. From its onset, we have been hurled into one challenge after another. A global pandemic, civil and racial unrest, and one of the worst economic crises in recent history. Despite these hurdles, we have done what we do best, adapt. Many of us were forced to rethink how we work, what is most important, and how to be as careful as possible with our dollars. We checked in with a few essential workers, corporate leaders, and creatives for their perspectives. Here, they reflect on their work and their resilience. Sienna J. Brown, 29, an entrepreneur in Spain. How has this year impacted your career? 2020 marked the biggest shift I could have asked for. For the past 6 years, I have been dedicated to teaching Black women how to move abroad and find work they love. And now the rest of the world has essentially caught up. Number 2, Nayla Ellis, 32, Detroit, founder Ellis Island Tea. How has your work life changed? Zoom meetings have become second nature at this point. In all seriousness, the grind is as important and challenging as it has always been. Once a problem is solved, it lays the groundwork for bigger and better problems to be solved. Number 3, Janae Ingram, 41, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, director Airbnb. How has your work life changed? Before 2020, I spent about 75 to 80% of time commuting. I didn't realize the toll it took on my life and the price I was paying by constantly being in motion. While COVID-19 has canceled many things, it has also allowed us to be inventive in connecting with others. Number 4, Tabia Yap, 29, Los Angeles founder, Biotis and Baya Blooms. How has your work life changed? The things that matter most have been brought into focus. As an entrepreneur, I have at times found it difficult to separate myself from my work, but this year I have decentered my inbox and social media and diversified how I spend my time. I have stepped up on FaceTiming with family, baking desserts, arranging beautiful flowers, and watching TV shows that have been on my quote-unquote got to watch this list. Right now, I'm deep into Top Chef. Number 5, Telsha Anderson, 27, New York City entrepreneur, TA Concept Store. How has this year impacted your career? An immerse opportunity might not have presented itself as early as it did had the world not taken a pause. I was able to tackle the retail industry from an unexpected angle and capture the attention of customers and press digitally, allowing the brand to attract our current audience of people who are eager to shop and support a Black-owned business. Number 6, Danielle Hobbs, 36, New Jersey, nursing assistant. How has 2020 impacted your perspective? I found a purpose beyond the traditional path of going to work, getting a steady paycheck, and pursuing an education for a salary boost. Somewhere between refrigerated trucks parked outside the hospital to carry bodies away and bystanders crowding the streets during the shift change to honk their horns to thank healthcare workers, I had an epiphany. Nothing in 2020 makes sense. And yet, everything I was born for is becoming clearer. Number 7, Arabia Mollet, MD, 40, Brooklyn physician. In what ways has 2020 shifted your priorities? I put my health front and center. Physically, I am taking advantage of my Peloton bike and working out 6 days a week. Spiritually, I am reading inspirational literature, praying and meditating 7 days a week. And psychologically, I sought healing by enrolling in mental health therapy sessions to deal with COVID-19 related post-traumatic stress disorder. I also took a break from work so I could focus on my other passions and spend time with my family and friends. The next article is titled, Mumia Speaks. Heartened by Black Lives Matter, imprisoned activist Mumia Abu-Jamal is still fighting the good fight, which now includes a deadly pandemic. We are living in unprecedented times, and Black Americans are feeling it, from the numerous killings of the unarmed men, women, and children by the police to the White House's failed response to the coronavirus pandemic, to violent retaliations by rogue vigilantes who infiltrate Black Lives Matter protests. Recent events have offered an unending display of how deeply entrenched in the country's social, economic, and healthcare systems racism truly is. Some of the most vulnerable persons affected by the coronavirus crisis reside in jails, prisons, and other detention centers across the country. According to a continuously updated New York Times study, those places account for the top 10 COVID-19 clusters in America. And as cases among the incarcerated climb, prison systems refuse to collect or disclose race data. Without those numbers, public health experts, community organizations, and Black families of the imprisoned have an incomplete understanding of the racial disparities in the coronavirus cases that occur behind bars. The dearth of information also limits the effectiveness of the health practitioners' responses. By exposing the huge inconsistencies in healthcare across for all Americans, COVID-19 has placed the U.S. at the center of a long overdue conversation. Yet, a recent report by the Marshall Project noted that when prison officials from all 50 states and the federal government were asked for the races of people tested for, diagnosed with, or killed by COVID-19, 43 prison agencies, including the Federal Bureau of Prisons, would not provide the information. The lack of data is deadly. The coronavirus claimed nearly 200,000 American lives through August 25, 2020. That's an average of about 1,100 deaths per day. There is a bottleneck happening, says Varun Mathima, an epidemiologist at Columbia University. People of color are being incarcerated at a far higher rate than their counterparts, while neighborhoods that are economically or politically disenfranchised have an accumulation of health factors that make them more vulnerable to COVID-19. With their overcrowding and unsanitary conditions, prisons have inflamed the spread of the coronavirus. According to the NAACP Criminal Justice Fact Sheet, Black people are locked up at a more than 5 times the rate of whites, which, when compounded with systemic racism, makes tackling the coronavirus pandemic a difficult problem to solve. Mumia Abu-Jamal has an inside perspective on how the pandemic and white terrorism have affected the Black community. The 66-year-old political activist and respected journalist has been incarcerated since his 1982 conviction for killing Philadelphia police officer Danielle Faulkner in a polarizing, racially charged case. In 2011, prosecutors withdrew the execution case against him because of flawed jury instructions. And in 2018, Philadelphia Common Pleas Judge Leon Tucker reinstated Abu Jamal's appeal rights. This is an unheard of legal victory, stated Rachel Wolkenstein, the activist lawyer at the time of the ruling. The next article is titled, Black Business Execs to Watch. Need some inspiration to elevate your game? Let the personal mantras of these career rock stars guide you. Ursula S. Lane, Director of Franchise Recruitment, Checkers and Rally's Tampa. Lane is responsible for bringing new franchise owners into the fold. I want to make sure that day to day, I'm getting Checkers and Rally's business opportunities out there to restaurateurs and business people who are interested in adding a burger brand to their portfolio, she says. Lane has been crucial to the company's expansion, which has included opening more than 80 restaurants in the past 2 years. Her mantra, be a student of the business. With a background in sales and marketing, Lane applied her motto when she left an advertising agency to learn the nuts and bolts of the restaurant industry. Whether you have been doing something for 10 years or 15 years, there are always new approaches, she adds. Meredith Pierce, North American Education Manager, Dauphin Paris Skincare, New York City. Pierce began her beauty career as a cashier at Sephora. She's now responsible for developing and executing Dauphin's strategic education programming for the U.S. and Canada. When the company launches a new product, she makes sure that retailers and field representatives know how to tout its virtues to customers. I want to make you fall in love with the brand, she says. Before joining Dauphin, Pierce headed beauty events for IT Cosmetics. Her mantra, step up to the moment. When you show up fully, you never know where that will lead. She learned the importance of focusing on the bigger picture when she worked at Sephora. Showing up 100% and putting your best foot forward opens new doors, she says. Felicia Williams, creative strategist, AR/VR, and emerging technology, Facebook Creative Shop Europe. For the past 2 years, the Norman, Oklahoma native has led a design team at Facebook in London that explores how augmented reality and virtual reality technology can transform how we work. Imagine putting on virtual reality glasses and being able to interact and brainstorm with other people without ever leaving the comfort of your home, says Williams, who has also held posts at Microsoft, Ubisoft, and MTV Networks. Mantra, go for it. If you don't take that first risk, you are never going to know if it was the opportunity that would set off your chain of success. That principle motivated Williams to move to 3 different countries and climb the leadership ranks. The next article is titled, Mumia Speaks, Part 2. After spending 39 years on death row, Abu Jamal continues to maintain his innocence as he and his attorneys pursue a new review of his case. Over 2 weeks, he spoke with Essence from Transylvania's State Correctional Institution, Mahonoy, about the impact and growth of Black Lives Matter, the organization's character and mission, and how COVID-19 has affected the prison community. Essence asks the question, Black Lives Matter has galvanized the world to address systemic racism and police brutality in this country. What are your thoughts on the movement and how this period will look through the lens of history? Mumia Abu Jamal responded by saying, what I have learned is that the Black Lives Matter movement has a very keen sense of history. Most of the members are students, I believe. They are certainly reading all the key works, and it shows that they are diligent about making change. Shortly after their emergence around the time of Ferguson, When it became the Movement for Black Lives, they came out with a policy paper that stated their position on various issues of importance to the African American community. When I read it, I was struck by it. Why? Because it was so similar, if not in tone, then certainly in spirit, to the 10-point program and platform of the Black Panther Party. I don't think that is coincidence. Black Lives Matter members read and studied and took what was valuable from the past and utilized it in their own way. They are not the Black Panther Party, despite what Rudy Giuliani has said publicly. White paranoia and fear have governed his thinking. But Black Lives Matter activists are very informed on the Black freedom struggle. They arrived at it in light of their own experiences and understanding and belief about what this moment demands. Essence also asked, as a former member of the Black Panther Party, you have witnessed how different sides of an agenda can react when face to face. With all that's going on outside, from the NFAC to white militias like the Boogaloo Boys and the Three Percenters are sitting on a powder keg while marching in nonviolent protest. Is there a way to navigate around such a threat? Abu Jamal responded, "The short answer is yes. Yes, there is a powder keg, and it has been there for a long time. But the question is, how do you respond to this? How do you respond to the present threats to the well-being and safety of the Black community? Young Black people are going to have to answer that because they are the ones who are going to encounter it head on. Speaking of the Black Panther Party, we used to talk about fascism in America. Recently, I have come to the understanding that all of us were born in what could be called a proto-fascist era. After Reconstruction, white power was seized by American fascists who consciously stripped Black people of political power, of the ability to vote. Proof of that is full voting rights didn't become a reality for African Americans until the 60s. Despite that 100-year period after the Civil War, what is written into constitutions and what is lived in the streets of the country are often two very different things. What does that say about a country that can ignore its own constitution for a century? Fascism is an American thing, like the Ku Klux Klan is an American thing, like the White Citizens Council was an American thing. We have to think in those terms. It expands our understanding of what it means to be in this country and what white supremacy really, really means. Once that understanding circulates through the atmosphere, people get new ideas about what's possible and respond with new challenges to the white state. The next question Essence asked was, we know racial biases affect medical care, whether we are inside or outside of prison. For starters, how is your health? What about the health of your fellow inmates? Is Mahonoy Correctional observing a particular guideline throughout this COVID-19 pandemic? Mr. Jamal answered, every jail is different. Every prison is different. But it is also the same. What the state has elected to do in Mahonoy Correctional is require every guy to wear a mask when he leaves his cell. Moving throughout the jail has been cut down very, very stringently. Let's say the child lunchroom is on the top tier, which would have maybe 25 people, but then you go to the yard and the number of people there is similar. The population is cut down and quartered so much that there isn't mass movement. Coming from death row to general population, I remember looking at all the people and thinking, of the Congo River or the Mississippi, except it was a sea of guys wearing their cocoa brown uniforms. You don't see that kind of movement now. And while everyone is required to wear a mask, I see, at the time of this interview, about a half dozen guys who are not wearing their mask, even though it is required to do so. This is prison, so people find it necessary to respond in ways they find comfortable. There are some jails, like SCI Phoenix and SCI Huntington in Pennsylvania, where the death counts related to COVID-19 are excessively high, but this has not been one of those jails. Another question Essence asked was, Black inmates are testing positive for COVID-19 at a higher rate than white inmates, according to the New York Times, which can leave many frightened and frustrated because there is no way to social distance in an overcrowded community. In the prison healthcare system, is the prison healthcare system equipped to fight a pandemic that places large groups of people at risk? Mr. Jamal answered, Sadly, the healthcare system in prison mirrors the one in society. That is to say, both systems are insufficient for the task. The prison system is woefully inefficient, and therefore we get a devalued system that prioritizes private profit over the health of the imprisoned. I know of this firsthand. I was blessed to have a group of people who cared for me and a young lawyer who was aggressive and fought with us, for us. Absent these two elements, I might not be here to talk to you today because of my own health crisis. Editor's note. Mumia Abu Jamal was diagnosed with hepatitis C in 2012 and spent 5 years fighting for access to treatment. In July 2019, a federal appeals court upheld his right to sue Corrections Department employees for denying him access to life-saving medications. The racial rifts in American society are hidden and silent during regular times. The same may be said of the prison system, except there are no regular times. At all times, the health of the imprisoned is secondary. The health of the bottom line to the private corporations that, quote unquote, provide health care is most important. And COVID-19 really makes that clearer and clearer. In a way, just like how 50 states have 50 different systems, the 30 odd prisons in Pennsylvania have 30 odd different systems because they have different leadership and are all fractured. Essence asks the question, elaborate on that, because given this high-risk population and how quickly the coronavirus can spread behind bars, Black and brown inmates are incredibly vulnerable to this deadly virus. Mr. Jamal responded by saying, in California, I have heard about the warden there in Chino, how they have been sending infected inmates into San Quentin, which really caused an explosion of cases, deaths, and sickness. The way the media spins it, it is saying that some people consciously want the virus because they think that is the way out to freedom. Essence further asked, do you feel that access to non-contact visitation, certain essential equipment like PPE or free medical visitation by doctors is happening and available where you are? Abu Jamal responded, "Funny you should ask. No, I just came from the infirmary and they were wearing cloth masks that are similar to the inmates, which are made of a cotton and have an extension that you can tie around your head or your neck. There is no special equipment, but again, this is an infirmary, not a hospital. I am looking at two guys right now across the way from me who have masks slid down around their necks. Their whole mouth and noses are visible." The final question by Essence states, "In your book, Have Black Lives Ever Mattered? You demonstrate how white police killings of black people are not a cause of quote-unquote bad apples on the police force, but a continuation of slavery and the systemic consequences of structural racism. With that said, how do you see the Black Lives Matter movement handling the upcoming challenges here and abroad?" Abu Jamal answered, "I am moved by the reach and depth of the Black Lives Matter movement. I wrote that book as a reflection and tribute to it. I find it remarkable, brilliant, and deeply caring group of young people. I love the people. I think of them as I do celebrated author and political philosopher Franz Fanon, who said, each generation must discover its mission and fulfill it or betray it. This generation has been impressive, and I depart from those of my generation by really looking at them with empathy and affection. My generation were the bad boys and girls at the party. Black Lives Matter members are not like that. Instead, they are attacking the systemic problems that have not been attacked. With that kind of precise focus from prior generations, I love them." The next article is titled, "A Work of Art." 3 days after receiving a historic Emmy at an equally once-in-a-lifetime virtual primetime Emmy Awards ceremony, Zendaya walks into Essence's cover shoot for the bookend of its 50th anniversary year. As much as the actress and activist has broken barriers in her past, it's her present and future in Hollywood that's winning. Have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.